This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. President Trump has said the U.S.-Israeli war against Iran was launched because there was an immediate threat from the Islamic Republic in their development of a nuclear weapon. Trump said they would use that weapon immediately. No evidence of that claim has been made public, but Frontline PBS has been on the ground in Iran investigating their capacity to develop nuclear weapons. Their documentary, Strike on Iran, The Nuclear Question, has been updated. It did air last night on PBS, but it's available for viewing online now, free. It's there on YouTube and on the Frontline channel on YouTube and on their PBS site as well. We're joined by Sebastian Walker. He's a Frontline producer and director, and he has been on the ground in Iran multiple times. And Sebastian, welcome to The Source.
Hi there. Good to be here. Thanks.
So Trump says that there was an immediate threat, that Iran was days away, maybe weeks away from developing a nuclear weapon. We had the bombing, that the 12-day war in 2025 that was supposed to prevent them from being able to do that. What can you tell us? Can you kind of give us sort of a fact check?
Yeah, right. I mean, that's the question here with this recent round of attacks, isn't it? Really, like the concept and the statements that we heard last summer about the extent to which the US had obliterated the nuclear sites, and then the extent to which Iran was now an imminent threat in the weeks leading up to this current round of strikes. So we started our investigation last year following those bombings that are known as Operation Midnight Hammer, where the US hit the key nuclear sites at Natanz, Fordo, and Isfahan. And the goal was to examine how much those strikes had set Iran's nuclear program back. So we were able to spend 2 weeks in Iran, traveling around the country fairly extensively. We went to Isfahan, we went to the north, we were able to visit some of the locations where strikes had occurred. And we worked closely with reporting partners at the Washington Post and Bellingcat and Evident Media to analyze satellite imagery and combine that with our reporting on the ground to really try to build a picture of how much those strikes had set the program back, how much those strikes had damaged the nuclear sites. And this updated film released last night is essentially kind of the reporting that we published in December, plus the events that have happened in the last several weeks, where we've seen obviously another huge round of attacks across the country. And, you know, statements from the administration that these were necessary because of an imminent threat. It's still unclear exactly what that imminent threat could have been. Our reporting is inconclusive about just how much of a threat Iran posed in the lead up to this conflict. You know, the satellite imagery that experts have been looking at isn't conclusive on that point. There was no obvious sign that there was, you know, progress towards a weaponization of the nuclear program that has been something the president has spoken about. But, you know, in our time on the ground in Iran, we did get the chance to sit down with senior leadership figures and just travel around the country and see some of the impact of that previous round of bombings, which was a pretty rare opportunity to have. It's hard to work in Iran as a journalist, and you know, it's rare to get this kind of access. So we certainly did have a kind of very rare window into the latest situation on the ground.
So the central question is about Iran's ability to enrich uranium to the point where it becomes weapons grade. And it doesn't seem like they were able to do that yet, but they did have about 900 pounds of enriched uranium, not quite where it needed to be just yet. And that was at Isfahan, a site that was bombed during the Midnight Hammer to the point where it would seem like it is the uranium is buried under tons of rubble.
That's right. Yeah, all of you're spot on with all of that. And I think, you know, one of the questions has been whether or not that highly enriched uranium stockpile is accessible for the Iranians. You know, it hasn't been thought that there was any way of them being able to retrieve it. But that is the kind of raw material that you would need to make a nuclear weapon. Iran has always insisted its nuclear program didn't have the goal of working towards a nuclear weapon, and that's what we heard from officials when we were there. But the question is, it's certainly a concern for international authorities like the IAEA, which is the UN's nuclear watchdog. You know, we interviewed the director general of that agency about, you know, the threat that Iran was posing, and there was certainly a lot of concern on his part that they had enriched such a large amount of the material that is needed. I mean, it's enriched to around, it's believed, 60%, which is just a short step from being able to go to weapons grade. It's you know, definitely kind of one of the materials that you would need to produce a weapon. So the existence of that material has long been a concern for the UN's nuclear watchdog. But they would need to go through various other steps aside from that to be able to produce a bomb. And when we spoke to the Director General of the IAEA back in the fall of last year, following the previous round of strikes, he said he'd seen no evidence that Iran was taking those steps towards producing a weapon. While concern existed over the stockpile of uranium, he hadn't seen evidence of those other signs that would lead him to that conclusion. We actually interviewed Grossi again. It's Rafael Grossi is the director general of that agency, as a part of this new film that we broadcast last night. And, you know, he's essentially still very concerned about that stockpile, but now doesn't really have the visibility to be able to know what's going on the ground. So,
but he's not given inspections opportunities.
Exactly. They're very limited in what they can see. And he seemed, you know, less like the visibility has been reduced to such an extent that he's not able to make determinations about the kind of threat Iran was posing. So, I mean, I think all of this, you're seeing it play out in the political realm. Also, we attended hearings on Capitol Hill where Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard was, you know, grilled by lawmakers on what the specific threat Iran was posing was. And there wasn't a lot of information there. I think, you know, there was some, you know, pretty tense exchanges between lawmakers and the administration officials in those hearings about what does or doesn't constitute an imminent threat. And the takeaway that we heard in that room was that essentially it's the president's decision what constitutes an imminent threat. So, you know, the lawmakers were very
right, but that's supposed to be Tulsi Gabbard's job, is to make those determinations, not just the president, and based on fact. But those facts have not been made, have been given to the public. We don't know.
That was part of the frustration in the room, for sure. There was a lot of, you know, concern about the lack of information specifics that we were getting from the administration about what that threat was. And I think that's factored into just this current debate that's unfolding around whether or not there was an urgent need for military action as a result of what Iran was doing in the nuclear realm. I mean, the administration has also talked about the threat of the ballistic missile program, Iran's conventional missile program, you know, that had been rebuilt. We talked to experts for this film that were basically showing how there had been activity at those sites, those conventional missile production sites. But again, that's a capability Iran has had for some time. It doesn't really constitute the imminent threat that the administration has been talking about. Although, you know, this is something that kind of has been an ongoing conversation in Washington about just kind of what justification there could be. Maybe the conventional missile program could potentially be seen as part of the imminent threat that Iran poses. And, you know, Secretary Marco Rubio was talking about that in the initial days after this recent round of bombings. But it's a really, I mean, it's hard. It's a complex picture. When we were on the ground in Iran, you know, it's very limited to really get a kind of true picture of you know, the nuclear capacity. It's always challenging to work as a journalist in Iran.
Clear from your reporting that the people, at least the regime, was promoting it as a important part of their identity. They had posters of their scientists who died. They would turn them into martyrs. Right. This was an important part of their self-defense, at least.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we heard that from, for example, Ali Larijani, who was one of the most powerful leadership figures in the country, who was recently killed in an Israeli airstrike. We sat down with him in Tehran as a part of our journey back in the fall. And yeah, you do get that sense.
So there's some contradictions there. We're not trying to build a nuclear weapon, but it seems like they kind of are. And, you know, and moving forward, if they weren't trying to build a nuclear weapon, then they probably will be now I got to hit this break.
Yeah.
We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation. Our phone lines are open. If you have a question or comment about, did you think Iran was an imminent threat with a nuclear weapon and how that became the justification for the war, give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Source continues after a one-minute break. We'll be right back.
Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Donald Trump will be addressing the nation tonight about developments with the war with Iran. Not sure what he's going to announce. Are we going to withdraw? Are we going to double down? Hard to say, but there's been varying justifications that have been offered by the administration on why we have gone to war with Iran. One consistent, though, point has been we don't want Iran to have a nuclear weapon, and they were about to get one. Frontline PBS has been investigating. They have been talking to the experts, and they've been talking to officials in Iran about this, and they have pictures showing the damage that the United States did last year with the bombing that happened with Operation Midnight Hammer. We're hearing about what really it looks like. Is that really true? Were they imminently about to have a nuclear weapon? As far as we can tell, it's hard to say, but there's no hard evidence that they were about to, but who knows? You can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255. Sebastian Walker is with us, a frontline producer and director. And you've been in Iran about, what, four times?
Yeah, that's right. Over the last several years, this has been a place we've reported from quite a bit. Myself and my reporting partner, Adam Desiderio, we were there, you know, during some quite tense times previously, during protests that took place in recent years. We were actually in Iran during some quite sensitive moments. But this trip, I think, was probably the most sensitive time that we'd ever been there. The scrutiny from the authorities was very high. You know, you're always having to work with essentially a minder, a government affiliated translator who, you know, monitors everything that you do. You're very limited in where you can go. You know, it's a difficult and challenging place to work as a journalist. But, you know, one of the real benefits is being able to sit down with top Iranian officials and have a direct in-person conversation, which can't be controlled. You know, you can ask the questions that you want to ask, and that's something that I think has some real value. The conversation we had with Ali Larijani about the nuclear program that you see at the end of the film was a pretty insightful one.
Yeah. So there are people who say that this type of reporting is propaganda for the Islamic Republic, and then there are, and other people are saying that you're doing intelligence gathering for the United States and Israel. So you're getting it from both sides.
Yeah, I mean, both of those. I mean, we're journalists. We've got, you know, decades of experience reporting on the region. This is something that we do for a living. So this is, you know, it's important when you're talking about these issues to go to the places at the heart of the story and see for yourself and be able to have conversations for yourself with the people involved. And I think that's something that is kind of the core principle of the work that we do. That's a very basic, fundamental journalistic principle, and that was the driving force here. I mean, one thing I would also say is that, you know, we were very aware of the limitations that we would be facing while on the ground. We were, you know, clear-eyed about how much pressure there would be from, you know, the freedom of where to go and who we could talk to. So that's why we decided to combine our reporting on the ground with reporting from satellite imagery. We teamed up with the Washington Post's visual forensics team, with Bellingcat, which is an investigative nonprofit newsroom and Evident Media, so that we could have that, you know, eyes in the skies approach to the reporting that we were doing on the ground, to be able to complement what we were seeing with what people were seeing on satellite imagery. That's something that you can really kind of get another dimension to the reporting with, using those visual investigative tools and open source techniques to be able to build a kind of more complete picture of the situation that we were seeing.
Which is all the more important since we're not getting a lot of information from the Trump administration. Let's go to a caller, Scott. And Scott, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. So they deny that they're building a weapon. So do we have evidence that they're building more nuclear power plants? Why do they need a stockpile of fissionable material?
Thank you, Scott. So, Sebastian?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, a lot of countries use nuclear energy as a key source of their, you know, energy supplies, and Iran argues that it should be able to do that as well, and that, you know, its pursuit of that isn't necessarily something that should be sanctioned. So I think the big question when it comes to Iran is why the need, therefore, to enrich uranium to such a high percentage. You know, they're enriching uranium to, you know, around 60%, which is way higher than most kind of peaceful nuclear programs would need to enrich. So, I mean, yes, there is certainly, you know, a case to make that there should be, you know, nuclear energy should be a resource for any country to be able to use. But there's still question marks in the way that Iran was going about it. But to your question, they do have nuclear energy plants, the nuclear facilities that you know, do generate nuclear energy for the country. That's something that exists in Iran, as it does in many other countries as well.
Mowing the grass, that's a horrible term that's being used to describe this periodic bombing of like Iran and other places in the Middle East in order to put down their ability to make war. Do you think what's happening now is mowing the grass in terms of what the Trump administration and Israel is trying to achieve?
I mean, I guess it's a reference to the fact that, you know, taking military action in a situation where, you know, perhaps the greater achievements could be done through diplomatic means. I mean, that's something that we're hearing right now about whether or not there could have been a better path to follow through the diplomatic negotiations that were taking place to try to get a deal on Iran's nuclear program. I mean, there was a deal under the Obama administration that imposed limits on Iran's capacity to enrich. And then, you know, the talks that were held in Oman in the lead up to this latest military action, there were a lot of people involved in those talks who were very optimistic that there could be, you know, some kind of a deal reached that would avoid military action. So, I mean, mowing the grass is it's normally referring to the kind of proxies that exist in neighboring countries and the kind of militias and different elements that exist there. So, but yeah, I think it really puts the highlight on the need for kind of.
It's such a banal term, you know. I mean, they're right. Killed. People are dying, and it seems like, So regime change has been the Trump administration one of their objectives. And they claim, Trump is claiming that that has been achieved because the supreme leader, the Ayatollah Khomeini, was killed. Do you see regime change?
So, yeah, that's something that's we believe is going to be part of the address that's happening this evening about whether or not regime change has occurred. The Trump administration has said in recent days that effectively the regime has changed. I mean, they took out the supreme leader, Ali Khamenei. So, you know, technically whether or not that constitutes regime change is, you know, arguable. Like, I think that the idea of regime change in Iran is, you know, having a completely different system of government that maybe doesn't, it isn't what's reflected in the fact that Khamenei's son Mojtaba has taken over as the next supreme leader. So is that, you know, just more of the same? I think one of the interesting points here is this tactic of taking out leadership figures maybe kind of creates more of a kind of hardline or military aligned leadership structure. Like the idea that you can remove leadership figures and kind of hope that there's a completely different group of people who are going to come in next. That's very much in question from what we're seeing happening right now with Iran's leadership structure.
Because the new supreme leader is more aligned with their traditional guard.
Yeah, he's thought to be, you know, closer to the IRGC, Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. I mean, very little is known about him. He's been rarely seen in public. He's thought to be more hardline than his father. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of question marks about whether or not this is going to be a better situation, a better, you know, group of people for the U.S. to deal with. I mean, our interview with Ali Larijani is a case in point. This is a man who was, you know, seen as a pragmatist, as a seasoned negotiator, a diplomat, somebody that potentially could be, you know, a power broker who could harness the different factions of Iran's government.
So maybe they got regime change, but they just got the wrong kind of change that they didn't want. It's going to be much hardliner, and that Iran could be seen as a wounded beast and more determined to get a nuclear weapon as for a deterrent in the future. We'll have to see what happens next, but your reporting, so informative, so insightful, an opportunity to see the humanity of Iran. I appreciate, Sebastian, your reporting. Sebastian Walker, frontline producer and director, Strike on Iran, The Nuclear Question. It's available for viewing on streaming. You can find it on YouTube, on the Frontline channel, also on the PBS app and on their website. Thank you so much, Sebastian.
Thanks. Great talking to you.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation. Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.